Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the sound, it's John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning into the award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Well, this morning we're going to spend a few minutes of the last Sunday in October talking about November, which is National Adoption Awareness Month. And there's no better person to help us promote the hundreds of Connecticut children hoping to find an adopted family than Commissioner Joette Katz of the Department of Children and Families. Then we're going to catch up one final time with a frequent and long valued resource to our program. Yes, it's true, Marty Schwartz, who's been such a strong leader and effective advocate in his position as president and CEO of the Kennedy Center, has announced his retirement. So we're going to head to his office in Trumbull to hear some parting words before he departs the agency he served for most of his life. Then we'll close catching up with Treasured Time, a boutique nonprofit that serves all of Connecticut, orchestrating and planning treasured moments for adults and heads of households who are battling life-threatening illnesses. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vocat, right after this reminder. During National Pancreatic Cancer Awareness Month in November, New Country Motor Cars of Hartford is supporting the Ron Foley Foundation's mission to find a cure for one of the most deadly cancers. On Friday, November 10th, from 6 to 9 at its Mercedes-Benz dealership, New Country will hold a special fundraising event called Rock Away Pancreatic Cancer. It's going to include light fare and beverages and a private concert. Established in memory of Ron Foley, who lost his battle with pancreatic cancer in 2005, the foundation bearing his name is dedicated to promoting early detection and ultimately finding a cure through ongoing research. The minimum suggested donation is just $50, so come on out and help the cause. Well, of all the commissioners and all the departments in Connecticut, one of the ones I enjoy chatting with every once in a while is Joette Katz. She is commissioner of the Department of Children and Families here in Connecticut. And longtime listeners probably know from talking to prior commissioners as well as Ms. Katz, my goal has always been to try to reflect on all of the good news, because so many of the headlines and reports we hear about DCF are those fractional moments when there's bad news. But there's a million good stories for every bad headline, and we hope to make you out there listening this morning one of them, and that means putting you together with a child who is seeking adoption. Because when you foster or adopt, you change a child's world, as the DCF website so succinctly puts it, and you help place that children in a situation where they can share themselves with you. And it's great that the commissioner has taken the time to actually come on and advocate for this cause, which I know she feels so strongly about. So, Joette, thanks for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me, and let me begin by thanking you, because you really are a tremendous ambassador, both for the department, but in particular for adoption in Connecticut. And you've been doing this for many years in this radio program, and also the Newtown Bee, and so you've really been a staunch supporter of adoption for so many years. So let me begin by thanking you.
Yes, and just not just an advocate, but a frontline player, being adopted myself, and I really look at every opportunity, whether it's at a dinner party or a ball game, where I get to chat up foster and adoption opportunities, or in the venue that we're on this morning. You know, it is in some small way a tribute to my parents, who have both passed, but who, you know, took that leap of faith, and look what happened. For good
Absolutely.
Or ill, here
no,
we are.
No, for very good. And it's so nice of you to say that and acknowledge them.
Yeah.
You know, it's such a special opportunity to be able to adopt a child, and particularly a child in foster care, who really needs a home, and it brings such enormous joy. Those of us who have raised children can attest to that. It's never without its challenges, but you know, nothing rewarding is really supposed to be entirely easy. Life isn't easy, but the ability both to help a child, to raise a child, to create a life changing connection with a child, I don't know how. There's no way of really quantifying that.
Yeah, and I think one of the greatest opportunities that we might be able to help promote and discuss this morning is how many people you probably just personally in your world have talked to who have said, I never thought I could be a parent or a caregiver to a young child, never mind, adopt one myself. So this is an opportunity to not just promote these programs through DCF for adoption, but also to reaffirm to people that virtually everyone has the ability to make a child's life better.
Absolutely. So, there are no fixed rules in the sense of you don't have to be the conventional husband-wife. You don't have to be married. You can be single. You can be same-sex, couple, married, not couple. In fact, we've had 87 same-sex couples adopt since 2007 alone. I mean, what really, to me, and it's not my expression, it's well-known, what makes a family is love, and that's really what people, that is a requirement. So if there's any requirement that you have to have when you come to the table, it's that you have love in your heart and that you're prepared to give that unconditional love to a child. So before, because I'm always so late in identifying connections and phone numbers and emails, if you don't mind, I just want to shout out before we go too much further to call everyone's attention to 888 Kid Hero, KIDHERO, or to go to ctfosteradopt.com. That's ctfosteradopt.com, and you'll be connected with a knowledgeable professional to guide you through every step of the way. But aside from what you'll hear on when you make that phone call or you go on the website, it really is important to remind people that this is really about love. November is Adoption Month, and I'm happy to say later on this month we're going to have 80 adoptions on a given day. It's going to be an open court throughout the state, and we expect people like yourself and other news media outlets to cover the adoption, TV crews, et cetera. And they love these stories. Everybody loves these stories because they're just win-win.
Yeah.
There's also going to be, on November 18th, we're going to have a special benefit concert in Hamden with ticket proceeds going to a special fund for children in foster care.
Fantastic.
So there are lots of opportunities and lots of ways to get involved and to learn further about what you can do to be an adoptive parent.
Sure. And for everyone who has an active or a motivated interest, there's probably 10 others there who think, yeah, maybe someday, or maybe maybe at this point in my life I'm not ready, or even people who say, you know what, I don't want to call a phone number and have to give information or kind of get my identity hooked into this. I have learned that there are also loads of these very kind of intimate boutique open houses and scheduled events at churches and community clubs and in very familiar local places in their community where people across Connecticut can go and just drop in. They don't necessarily even have to give their names. They can just kind of sit back and listen almost always to stories of incredible inspiration from people who are there talking about their stories. But, you don't have to worry that if you make an inquiry now for something you may be planning for a year from now or 5 years from now or even beyond that, it's never too soon to begin to get familiar with the opportunities and process.
Absolutely. And again, I treat this conversation as one of those opportunities. I think people have these misperceptions about the requirements or the costs associated. So if you would allow me, first of all, we anticipate needing homes for roughly 600 children next year. Based on the numbers of children who come into care every year, the children who get returned, the children who get reunited with their families, the children who go into relative foster care. So at the end of the day, we still anticipate needing close to 600 homes for children next year. I mean, it could be fewer if people were willing to take in sibling groups. Mm. We struggle, certainly, with sibling groups, placing them, because not every home is ready to accept multiple children. Teenagers have their own challenges, and sometimes we also have children with special medical or other specialized needs for whom we need special homes. Having said that, there are the other, I think, misperceptions that there's some cost associated with it, and I want to be really clear, there is no cost to get licensed. First of all, there's certainly no cost to get information and to sit in on events and come into a courtroom or listen to this conversation or get other information in a variety of sources, from a variety of sources. There's no cost, but there's also no cost associated with getting licensed. To be able to adopt, there's definitely pre-licensing training, and that equals about 30 hours, and that can be done over a 10-week period. Again, there's no cost. There will be home visits by our licensing staff, a home study, which you would hope, and certainly I think anybody should reasonably expect, and there's no cost associated with that. And then obviously we do conduct background checks to make sure that there's no criminal or child abuse concerns that would prevent licensure.
Mm-hmm.
And again, no cost with that. And I think people reasonably could expect that we would want to make sure that before we placed a child in a home, that the home was suitable and that we would not have any criminal or child abuse concerns that would get in the way.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing, in terms of we're talking about cost, not only is there no cost associated with any of that, there's in fact a subsidy to pay for the cost of caring for a child, and that varies with the age and needs of the child, but it hovers around $800 a month.
Mm-hmm.
And again, these are to meet the needs of the children. Anyone who's raised a child knows that there are costs associated with raising children. There's also health insurance that's provided. If, in fact, counseling, because of some of the trauma that the child may have experienced, counseling for the child or the family is also something that we can provide. And we also are able to provide respite, because everyone needs a break once in a while. And if you don't have family or friends who can take your children when you want to go away for a weekend, we can help provide that as well.
Yeah, and so, as I was going to say, as I heard in the last open house I attended just a couple of months ago, which it didn't, you know, I didn't realize it, is that this respite is coming from others. Everybody's on the same, sort of the same team, even though that team has 8,000 players on it. And the really cool part of it is that the respite isn't just if you need to go visit somebody in the hospital, or you need to take a vacation, or go to the movies, or out to dinner with your significant other, or sans your foster or adoptive children. These people provide respite when there are concerns and questions. It's not just about time off. It's about that camaraderie and the advice and the empathy that these other adoptive and foster parents in the network can provide you.
That is so true, and thank you for saying that, because that really is the ability to share with one another, people who have been similarly situated, who have gone through the process before, who understand that the needs of some of our children and concomitantly the needs of the parents who care for them. And sometimes it can be stressful. There's no question about it. And look, as we've said, raising children can be stressful under the best of circumstances, but for some of our children who have experienced, sadly, some of the worst of circumstances, it really can sometimes require additional patience and guidance and support, and we provide that as well, and not just at the agency, but through that network that you so kindly described.
Yeah, and the other thing that I was exposed to was the level and quality of support for those very brave and dedicated individuals that choose to take on a child with special needs, all the way up to this one representative that I met whose, child was essentially, in a wheelchair needing respiratory assistance, in the rare event of 24-hour medical support, that is there. And then you work backward from that point down to even children with behavioral issues who just need that sort of regular counseling component or that family counseling component, right?
Absolutely. And in fact, I met one such foster mother. She's remarkable. Her specialty is children with special medical needs, and she got additional training to be able to accommodate the child because he had a trach. And when I met her, she outlined all of the things that she did in support of each of the children that she had fostered and adopted. I think she had fostered something like 31 children and ultimately adopted 6 or 7 of them, and they all had medical needs. And the joy and pride she took in talking about actually how each one of them far exceeded any of her expectations. There was one child she took in whom she had been told would probably never talk, and this child's going to college next year. I mean, it was so heartwarming. I mean, so heartbreaking to think of what this child had endured, mm-hmm. but so phenomenal to think about how this woman had really rescued him and changed his life and changed her own in the process.
Yeah, to say nothing of the child's potential or tenacity, but having that level of support and confidence and love is, really does work miracles.
Absolutely.
Yeah. The other thing I did want to touch upon in the last couple minutes that we have with you, Commissioner Katz, is, a couple of the quick hit questions. I continue to surprise people when I tell them you can be part of the DCF and Partner Network's adoption initiative as soon as you turn 21.
Yep, that's exactly right.
And you don't have to own a home. You don't have to be married, as you said, the income requirements are even quite accommodating.
Absolutely. I mean, you know, we need to be assured that you can support yourself and that the money that is provided is money that will ultimately go to pay for the needs of the child, and that you're not going to be using the stipend, roughly $800 a month, to live on. I mean, and I think that's frankly quite fair because it really is intended for the child. But you don't have to own a home. You don't have to have. You don't have to make a gazillion dollars. You don't. You know, we want our families to be real families and to represent. And we expect nothing more of them than the citizens of the state of Connecticut bring. So. You know, as I said, love makes a family. So you don't, and it's really, I think it's important. You can, as we said, you can be single. You don't have to be in any relationship. Obviously, if there are other people living with you, we need to make sure that other members of the household don't have CPS, Child Protective Services history or criminal history. But short of that, that's not what makes a family. It's the love and the ability to care for the child that makes the family.
Yeah. There's a fantastic FAQ, frequently asked questions, component to the website at ct.gov/DCF. But you can really get started with just the phone that's in your pocket or your hand by calling 888-KID-HERO, 888-KID-HERO, or hit the website for an open house schedule where you can go and actually kind of quietly sit and listen and learn whether your interest in adoption is something that you see in the medium to far future or it's something that you're anticipating doing in November, Adoption Month, this year, or at some point soon. I really want to thank you again, Commissioner, for your work, and especially the team that you have, as we said, you know, thousands strong in terms of your staff there, and all working really, really hard on behalf of the many more thousands of children in Connecticut who not only need the help of the Department of Children and Families, but of folks who may be listening to the program this morning. We hope they call 1-888-KID-HERO, and thank you once again, Commissioner Joette Katz from Connecticut's Department of Children and Families, for helping spread the word. Well, since 1951, the Kennedy Center has been serving folks throughout Connecticut and beyond. It's one of the most comprehensive rehabilitation facilities in the state of Connecticut, and currently supports 2,400 individuals with vocational, residential, educational, therapeutic, social, and recreational programs and services. And for my entire time on the award-winning For the People, these 28 some odd years, I've known the man who has been greatly responsible for leading the organization, Marty Schwartz. Much like Steve Martin on Saturday Night Live, he's been one of the most frequent guests on the program, 20 plus appearances on the program, really serving as a resource to keep myself and our listeners up to speed, particularly on the importance and the disparity in state aid to the people that the Kennedy Center and many other organizations like it serve in Connecticut. We're so proud to have been the inaugural Media Partner Award winners for the Kennedy Center. And now Marty Schwartz is getting ready to retire. So we're having our final interview with him as a representative of the Kennedy Center. I don't doubt that after you enjoy some time for yourself, Marty, you may be re-engaged in some sort of leadership capacity on a board or something where we'll cross paths. But congratulations. You've certainly earned a break, and you've done great work here. Thank you so much for the resource you've been able to provide our program.
Well, thank you very much for saying that, John. And I must say that I think Steve Martin's a lot funnier than I am. Mm-hmm. But I appreciate the parallel.
Those who know him may not agree. But this organization has achieved the highest level of accreditation from the Commission on Accreditation of Rehabilitation Facilities. Obviously, your leadership and the people who look up to you and follow your lead are also hugely responsible for this. But can you articulate to the folks that are listening why that kind of accreditation is so critically important in the big picture of what you do?
Yeah, we've received CARF accreditation, which is international accreditation for rehab facilities, since 1981. We've always achieved the highest level of accreditation, which is a 3-year accreditation, but we've also achieved something that's sort of very unusual. We've had 3 perfect accreditations. There are over 1,000 standards that are applied when a survey team comes in to survey an organization, and 3 times since 1981 to the present, we've received accreditations that are perfect, no recommendations at all, which is really unique. The accreditation is really important. It's the good housekeeping seal of approval for rehab organizations. So basically, it says that the organizations meet very high standards in terms of the quality of services that they provide to people with disabilities. So we're very proud of that.
When we talk about rehabilitation, it may mean getting a person to their highest level of functionality, but it also could mean getting them from a place where they are experiencing a challenge to a place where they're no longer experiencing a challenge. I've had opportunities to meet a lot of people on the autism spectrum of all ages and abilities, and certainly the Kennedy Center has taken the lead in both focusing on and supporting individuals on the autism spectrum. As this population of clients and state residents continues to kind of grow exponentially, can you speak to the role that organizations like the Kennedy Center actually play in getting folks from a place where maybe their parents or caregivers have been told, oh, you know, don't expect too much, this child or this young person is probably only going to reach, or don't expect them to go beyond a certain level of functionality. And you have seen countless times where they've broken through that kind of imposed barrier and gone on to incredible achievements.
Yeah, well, it's the goal of the organization to help each individual we serve reach their greatest level of potential. And, you know, whether that's in terms of the world of work and a variety of other caring for themselves, being more independent in terms of their living arrangements, whatever it is, you know, our goal is to help people to feel as fulfilled and to basically to feel that they're contributing to society, they're feeling good about themselves and their place in the world, and again, basically reaching their greatest potential so that they have a fulfilling, enjoyable, and a life that contributes to others as well. Mm-hmm. We serve people from birth through senior years with a variety of disabilities, people with intellectual disabilities, people with autism diagnoses, as you mentioned, people that have hearing impairments, visual impairments, people with mental health challenges. And again, the idea is for each individual to look at them specifically as an individual and be sure that we get them to the place that is most meaningful to them and to the community.
So an individual who may be in a very early stage of hearing and learning about a diagnosis of a disability or an autism spectrum disorder, that they should not look at that initial diagnosis as being a do-all, end-all. I mean, certainly so many of these people with the right support and services like the Kennedy Center offers can eventually work their way to oftentimes greater achievement than may have been originally thought, don't you think?
Absolutely. And, you know, we always tell families we work with, you know, the sky's the limit, and they should always have aspirations to see that their loved one is able to achieve a very high standard in terms of where they're at and where they can be. You know, we're working now actually with Fairfield University. We have a autism spectrum program with them. And, you know, there are so many opportunities out there and so many different approaches. And with the right formula, the right way of working with the person, there's no question that, you know, they could really reach much greater level of functioning than anticipated initially with a diagnosis. Diagnoses are scary, and people need to go beyond the diagnosis and to seek out the proper services so that an individual can be totally fulfilled.
Certainly seeing is believing, but it seems like believing is the key ingredient in that recipe.
Yeah, and again, we've seen it so many times where initial impression even would be that a person would not reach a certain level, and yet they've gone beyond that level with the proper care and the proper training and work. Mm.
Certainly in your time with the Kennedy Center and across the span of your life's experience, you know, you're bringing some both institutional knowledge but also historic knowledge to the table. I want to talk about two specific things, the first being mobility and the access, the evolution of access to individuals, particularly who may be confined to wheelchair or have significant mobility challenges. How well are we doing as a state, as a society, in fulfilling the commitments that we may have to individuals with significant mobility problems in terms of giving them a greater level of access and ability to get around to things that they want to do, places they want to be?
Within the community, yeah, we have a program that started many, many years ago, a travel training program. And it started actually with the Bridgeport Transit District. And it's a real win-win because in many cases, before we started this travel training, people would have to use what's called demand response system of getting from one place to another, where they would have to call. Yeah, exactly. They would call a shuttle. They would have to call them at least an hour in advance. and the shuttle would pick them up, and they would take them to where they need to go. Let's say it's a doctor's appointment. And then they would have to call when they completed the appointment, and they would have to give another hour notice to be able to be picked up again. What we're doing is we're and that's very costly to the transit districts, and it's certainly, you know, very time-consuming for the individual, and it lacks flexibility. Mm-hmm. So what we've been doing is teaching individuals to better access public transportation. People with intellectual disabilities, people with mobility challenges, so that they're able to actually take public transportation and be able to get to where they need to go, and give them more flexibility so they could do it on their time schedule, and also gives them a lot more varieties of the places that they could access by using public transportation. So again, in some cases, they're limited because of mobility access, but in other cases, you know, they are able to be able to use this public transportation system, which allows them, again, much more flexibility, and it also provides the transit district with an opportunity to transport people from one place to another at a much lower cost.
Have you also seen an expansion and greater adherence to ADA conformity, particularly in public buildings here in the greater Bridgeport area throughout Connecticut? Are the people who are most mobility compromised able to get to and do more things today as a result of, in part, the advocacy that you and the Kennedy Center have been able to bring?
Well, definitely the answer to that question is yes, there is a lot more accessibility now than there had been, let's say, even 10 or 15 years ago. We certainly advocate for that, as do a variety of organizations, and it's so vital that that happens. But I really feel that although more can be done, both the state and the federal government have really stepped up to the plate and have worked hard in ensuring that there is much greater accessibility for people that have mobility issues.
Thank you. Marty Schwartz is the leader of the Kennedy Center, providing individually designed, person-centered planning, family support, and community involvement. They create a difference in the lives of individuals with disabilities and their families across Connecticut and beyond. Marty is retiring shortly. We're about a little over halfway through our conversation with him this morning, saying farewell and getting a few last points of information from him, as he has been such a great resource to our program over these many years that I've been on board. Please stick with us. We're going to be back with our conversation with Marty Schwartz here at the Kennedy Center in just a minute.
Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Coming up on Thursday, November 9th, Stepping Stones Children's Museum is hosting its second annual Friendsgiving fundraiser at its iconic facility in Norwalk's historic Matthews Park. Event proceeds will benefit the Open Arms Initiative, reaching more than 45,000 children, caregivers, and teachers throughout the region. Open Arms offers monthly free admission evenings, parent workshops, free traveling exhibits for schools, and numerous other educational, informational, and learning experiences to inspire lifelong learning. Cocktails, hors d'oeuvres, and networking begin at 6:30, followed by an intimate harvest dinner based on a delectable Thanksgiving-inspired menu from Chef Matthew John at 7:30. For details and tickets, just visit steppingstonesmuseum.org/friendsgiving.
We're back and visiting the Kennedy Center, which is promoting the empowerment of individuals with disabilities to achieve their optimal participation and inclusion in the community with both dignity and confidence. That's really been a trademark of the Kennedy Center since it was established in 1951. And prior to our break, we were talking a little bit about mobility access. The other thing that seems to be really spiking in terms of a trend, Marty, is the recognition of the disabled as a highly viable and valued element of the workforce. Kennedy Center has been a pioneer in job training and matching individuals to jobs, enticing, attracting, and motivating employers to realize the value of this population that you serve. In your tenure here at the Kennedy Center, can you talk about the evolution and how proud you must be at the workforce participants that just the Kennedy Center alone has been able to generate here in Connecticut and beyond for so many years?
Yeah, John, there really has been quite a transition. When I first came here, which was, I believe it was 1978, we had a sheltered workshop, and we had many people employed in a shelter where we served around 200 people at that time. And we brought work in from various industries, and the consumers, the people that we served, performed that work, and they were paid on a piece rate basis. So there was a time study, a Department of Labor structure for that to determine the rate of pay that they would get. But it was in a sheltered environment. So the good thing about that is if they weren't as productive, they could do less work, you know, assembly, let's say disassembly, you know, piecework, and get paid for the items that they completed. But we then began working with various businesses and industries in the community, recognizing that a lot of our people had tremendous talent and they were able to do work very, very quickly. So what we did is we contacted industries and placed people in jobs, very often with job coaches. We would have a staff member go to a job in an industry in the community with a consumer, with one of the people we serve, and the job coach would assist them with any bumps in the road that they had in terms of doing the work. And very often we found they would pick up very quickly on the job, and we no longer needed the job coach. And they did very well. And for many people, and these were people primarily at that time, people with intellectual disability, we expanded the scope of our operations and the people we served as time went on. But we found for many of these people, what might be seen by some as a very entry-level position, for our people that were placed in this job, they were so grateful and it was a career for them. So they were always there on time. They were always working as fast as they can. They didn't want to take breaks. They just wanted to get as much work done. And the greatest, expansion of placement of people with disabilities, especially the intellectually disabled population, was from one industry talking to another, talking about how great our workers were. And that really opened up the floodgates in terms of placing more of the people out in the community. And subsequent to that, we really expanded that services to people with a variety of other disabilities, placing them on jobs too with the same results. So basically, the employers are, you know, our greatest advocates in terms of the job development and job placement. But we've hired many staff who are great in terms of working with employers and placing people on the jobs. And what's great is that we provide whatever support is needed for the person on the job to ensure their success and to ensure that the business or the industry that they're working in is really satisfied with the work we're doing. Mm-hmm. So we place hundreds of people in jobs a year, and the success rate has been tremendous. So we're very, very proud of that. And the transition that's taken place over the past 39 years that I've been here has been incredible. And we're very, very proud again for what we've accomplished in that regard.
Yeah, certainly the pipeline of demand for services has continued to grow and grow and grow in your tenure, and going probably back to 1951 when the Kennedy Center started. And I imagine or know, based on our many previous conversations, that one of the greatest barriers that both the Kennedy Center and its consumers have to reaching the greatest level of achievement is funding. And your issue, as you have articulated so well on this program so many times, has been the proportion of funding that the Kennedy Center and other organizations and its consumers are getting. Let's talk a little bit and allow you the soapbox to appeal to folks out there who may have the influence or ability to help in that regard.
Well, as I've often said, we're the solution, we're not the problem. The nonprofit organizations supporting people with disabilities in the state of Connecticut provide very cost-effective services. Our rates are incredibly low, and probably too low, because I often feel we balance our budgets on the backs of staff members who are very dedicated to the population that we serve. But the funding from the state is extremely limited. In the past 7 years, we've had no increases. And the state, by the way, is really our biggest customer. They fund us to support the people with disabilities that we serve. But they fund us at a much lower rate than they fund themselves offering parallel programs, which is extremely unfair. Again, as I mentioned, in the past 7 years, we've had no increases, only decreases in funding. And it's really a travesty. I mean, I don't understand why the state of Connecticut and the society in general within the state of Connecticut doesn't recognize a responsibility to properly support the most vulnerable in our community. But yet somehow that hasn't been recognized as high a priority as it needs to be in our state. So what happens is the private nonprofit providers that do a tremendous job in supporting individuals with disabilities and helping them to reach their greatest potential, in many cases making them taxpayers rather than tax users, are not funded in a way that they need to be in order to ensure that they're able to continue providing those services in a quality manner. Mm-hmm. We rely heavily on the community for support because, again, the state does not provide the level of support that it should be providing. And I must say the community has been extremely supportive over the years of organizations like the Kennedy Center. We are so grateful. We do a lot of fundraisers, and we need to, in order to continue to provide quality services. But again, the people in our community really step up to the plate, and they've been wonderful. And it's great for us to see, and it's just reinforcement for all of us, the volunteers and the staff of this organization, to see how supportive the community is.
Probably around 5 years ago was when you began to step up the game in terms of calling for the state to make the complete transition of service providing to organizations like the Kennedy Center from institutional settings. If it could be coined as sort of a small victory, it appears that the state is on the way to that goal, or is at least realizing it and taking some steps to get there. At the same time, we hear criticism on the other side that the organizations like the Kennedy Center can't possibly deliver the level of quality or services that a state-run institution or state employees can. And, you know, maybe that's a ploy to, you know, keep more state jobs, keep more state institutions open. But, you know, for the last word this morning on this subject, what do you say to the people who have heard or are kind of propagating the idea that, you know, a kind of closed bubble of state institutional support is still the best way to go?
Yeah, I really, quite honestly, don't understand that at all. I think we've all demonstrated as private providers that we provide quality services to the population. I understand that state workers want to keep their jobs. I don't want to see anybody unemployed, but it doesn't make sense to have two parallel systems, one that basically costs twice as much as the other. The state system is very, very expensive, or more, as you say. It doesn't make any sense. If we have the funding, and even without the funding, we provide top quality services. As I mentioned before, the Kennedy Center and many other nonprofit organizations have international accreditation. For whatever reason, and I'm not sure what the reason is, in the state of Connecticut, the state programs have not sought accreditation. Other states, the state programs have, but the reality is, John, in most states, there no longer is a state-run program or state-run program supporting people directly with disabilities. The state generally contracts out with the private sector to provide the services. The state does the quality assurance piece, perhaps they do the case management, but they leave it to the private sector to provide the direct care in most states in the union because they recognize that that is the most cost-effective way of providing services. Our state hasn't quite gotten there yet, although I have to say, slowly, they are moving much more in that direction, and I think that's a function of recognizing that the state needs to be much more cost-effective considering the budget challenges that they have. So finally, they are moving in that direction, not as fast as they should be, but I do see change in that direction. But it's only fair to everybody, the individuals with disabilities, but also the taxpayers in this state, to see that those that are most vulnerable are receiving services in a quality manner, but also in a very cost-effective manner.
Marty Schwartz, I will miss these conversations in the context of the world of the Kennedy Center, and also the ability to pick up the phone and call when I have a question. You've always been there for our listeners and our audience, and for the thousands and thousands of clients and caregivers and staff of the Kennedy Center, the consumers and the communities that you serve, all are better off for having you at the helm of the Kennedy Center on your retirement. We wish you well. And for all of these opportunities to talk, we send you off with our congratulations on your retirement. The Kennedy Center is one of the most comprehensive rehabilitation facilities in the state of Connecticut, supporting more than 2,400 individuals with vocational, residential, educational, therapeutic, social, and recreational programs and services. We bid farewell in a short time to its leader, Marty Schwartz. Marty, thank you for all the appearances and all the information and your friendship.
And John, thank you very much. And I've certainly enjoyed knowing you and having the opportunity to participate on the radio show on a regular basis. You've been a very strong advocate for people with disabilities, and we appreciate that so much. And I look forward to our paths crossing again and to having an opportunity again to speak with your listeners.
Farewell, my friend. Thanks.
Well, we're going to wrap up the program this morning with a great kind of a grassroots nonprofit that is doing business in the Naugatuck Valley, and it's called Treasured Time. And I'm pleased to be joined by Jen Moffitt. She is with that organization. They are holding their fifth annual shopping event and wine tasting coming up on November 16th. So if there's something about this agency and organization that touches you, maybe you want to come out and support them, either enjoy some wine and hors d'oeuvres, or maybe pick up some gifts, or take care of everyone on your gift list in the old-fashioned way. Go out and actually look at the gifts and buy them instead of clicking on a picture and buying it online, right, Jen?
That's correct, yeah. We've got many vendors and crafters there. Anything you can think of, we pretty much have it all in one room for you.
And the cool thing about this is it's a lot of this is almost one of a kind products. They're handcrafted stuff, right?
Yeah, so it's a good mixture of direct sales, marketing vendors, and crafters. So a lot of local people who have their own business that's, you know, not a normal, you know, LuLaRue or Mary Kay. We do have those as well, but we have a lot of crafters that come and peddle their wares as well. Mm-hmm. So
a lot of unique stuff. Let's talk about Treasured Time. It's a tax-exempt 501c3 nonprofit. What exactly, for the folks that might not recall our earlier visit with you a couple of years ago, remind them what Treasured Time is all about.
Yeah, so Treasured Time, since our inception about 5 years ago, we've had the honor to give the gift of moments, which is our tagline, to 28 parents with life-threatening illnesses who are looking to create a memorable family experience with their children. In addition, you know, we're currently planning for one more family to round off the 2017 year. We've helped families from all over Connecticut. Some of the towns we've serviced have been Derby, Oxford, East Hartford, New Haven, Stamford, Bridgeport, Naugatuck, New Milford, Farmington, South Windsor, Watertown, Stratford, Fairfield, Ansonia, Newtown, and Trumbull. So as you can tell, we kind of do help throughout the state of Connecticut. And we're honored and blessed to be able to give this gift of to the families and see the impact that it has in each and every one of them. And, you know, family members send us different things and thank yous and that type of thing. So it's something that we'd love to do, and we try to help as many families as we possibly can.
And you've been involved since day one, right?
Yeah, pretty much. You know, they had some planning stages in November, and I started in May, so a few months in between, but pretty much since the beginning, yeah.
Excellent. Well, without getting into the specific cases of the folks that you've helped, can you tell us a couple of stories about what individuals have asked for as their sort of, you know, their parting experience or activity?
Yeah, so our highlight family for this event, we try to highlight a family for each one of our large-scale events, is the Mott family out of New Haven. Zomara Mott is 32 years old. She's from New Haven and was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer with metastases in her liver and T12 spinal bone on April 14th of 2017. You know, she's going through quite a bit now as far as being, you know, treatment, and she had been going to doctors for close to 2 years complaining about aches and pains and things in her back, and you know, they kept doing tests and not finding anything, and then unfortunately 2 years later they found the cancer.
How did they reach out and get in touch with you or learn about Treasured Time and make the application?
Yeah, so what you can do is on our website at treasuredtime.org, we have a family application. You print that off. You take. You have to fill out a piece of it yourself. You also have your doctor fill out another piece and then mail that back to us, or you can scan it in and email it to us. And then, you know, it goes directly to our team that handles intake. And there's a process that goes along with it, some interviews with the family to find out, you know, what they're interested in doing, and then once we have an idea of that, then our board of directors votes families in to be helped and for us to give them that gift of moments.
So has your focus family for this year already utilized their activity, or is that yet to come?
Yes, they actually just got back. They went to Disney. So they had a great time. Every year we have a celebration of life picnic for all of our volunteers and their families, as well as the families that we've helped. And we were able to see them right after they got back from their trip and hear all their stories, and the kids were all excited. So it's just great to hear that and see all the pictures. And you really know that it's touched them and that they have these memories now that will last forever.
Mm-hmm. Destinations like big theme parks like that are mm-hmm. always significant when you talk about wanting to do special things with families. What are a few of the other things that you've heard about that folks have asked for that might have been, you know, a little bit more personal or unique in terms of what they wanted to do as their treasured moments together?
Sure, yeah. We've got, you know, a lot of people do like to do the Disney thing, as well as take a cruise, because, you know, you're on a boat together and making memories. But we've had a few families that one gentleman from Derby, actually, he didn't have many memories. He had, unfortunately has passed, but he had brain cancer. And the memories that he did have were of one trip that he had taken his family on to Mystic. So we sent them to Mystic, and we had them, you know, do things that he remembers doing with them. Mm. He just wanted to relive that memory, you know, and help the younger kids also have that memory with them. So there's things like that. We also had another family who went out to Las Vegas and took a helicopter to the bottom of the base of the Grand Canyon and had a beautiful picnic lunch. Another family went to Las Vegas again and renewed their wedding vows at 20 years. So there's a lot of different things that, you know, it may not be a cruise or a Disney vacation. It's just one thing that may touch them.
Well, I get, that gives folks a great idea of both what Treasured Time is all about and how folks can come to you to get those treasured moments fulfilled. So for folks who may want to support and assist Treasured Time, give them the lowdown in the last couple of minutes that we have about this upcoming event.
Yeah, so we're always looking for volunteers. So if anybody's looking for an organization to volunteer with, please give us a call. on our website, you can find our direct number. Real quick, it's 203-446-1068. Our website is treasuredtime.org. So the events that are coming up, you can also make donations on the website. The events that we have coming up, again, Thursday, November 16th at the Inn at Villa Bianca in Seymour. The first event kicks off at 5 p.m., and it's our fifth annual holiday shopping extravaganza, where we have crafters and table vendors kick off your holiday shopping with us. There's a cash bar available. We also will have special appearances by Harmony on the Sound Chorus throughout the evening. Mm-hmm. DJ Phyllis from Lone Wolf Productions will be there spinning the tunes all night, keeping us in the holiday spirit. I know you're familiar with Phyllis.
Oh, yes.
We have Santa will be there for photos from 5:15 to 8:15 before he heads back on off to the North Pole. We have tons of raffle prizes in that room. Mm-hmm. Every vendor that is there will provide us with a raffle prize, so we'll have a teacup auction in that room as well.
Excellent.
And then kicking off in the upper ballroom is our third annual wine tasting. It's sponsored by Glen Rose Spirit Shop, and it's going to benefit Treasure Time, obviously. It's called Red, White, and Rosé this year. So a $50 donation per ticket or two for $80 gets you into a wine tasting. Wines from around the world, along with domestic beers and ciders, which is new this year for our wine tasting. There's hors d'oeuvres, pasta station, silent auction. The silent auction items are really shaping up to be really, really nice this year.
Great.
We also have live music from Paula Patinella. We have a wine poll for $10 per bottle. And then we have cupcakes that we have donated every year from Lauren Anderson. So,
fantastic.
Lots of stuff going on.
Excellent. Folks, if you want to learn more about this organization or take advantage of the services they might offer to you if you're in that situation, just go to treasuredtime.org. Our guest is Jen Moffitt. She's been with the organization almost since its inception 5 years ago. We hope you'll come out to support the 5th annual shopping event and 3rd annual wine tasting on November 16th. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.